freaking auto!
This is Brock and Salk.
Brock Huard is my hero.
What Brock Huard says?
No, he's not a friend of mine.
Subscribe to receive every episode at Apple Podcasts or on Google Podcasts.
Ah, we stink, man.
Now, here are your hosts, Brock Huard and Mike Salk.
No way!
Hey, here we go. It's another Brock and Salk podcast. Hi, buddy.
Hello.
I would say we're ready for the regular season, but we're not. There's this, like, extra week in between. It's weird, man. The whole NFL season's weird. Garbage preseason games that don't mean... They mean, like, less than normal. Weird week off, and then this I can't even describe the seven... an odd number of games that they play. I'm so thoroughly confused. I'm not out on it. I'm not saying I don't like it. I'm not being an old man yelling at clouds. I'm not saying I don't like it. It's just weird. None of it is familiar. They're going to end the Super Bowl a week later instead of being the first Sunday in February. It's going to be the second one. Like, the whole thing is just kind of off.
Well, it's a good thing that everybody's back in the room. Do I understand that Kyle Brown in the house?
Kyle's back from his...
Gang's all here.
From his
boy, howdy in
tour.
The house.
The boys are back again.
Yes. The boys are back again.
The boys are back again.
We're all here, Brock. If you're here and I'm here, we're all here today.
And you know what? It was only a week ago on last week's podcast, Mike, that you lamented the preseason and the Seahawks. And what did they do? They
come out help.
And have a preseason Super Bowl 27-0 thrashing of the Los Angeles Chargers.
Yeah. I will say, Brock,
They hurt you, Mike. They hurt you.
Thank God.
They cut their run differential from 50 to 10 to 50 to 37.
Yeah, but I'm not like you, and I'm not like your wife. I was thinking about this I'm like neither. I mean, I think we all know that I'm not like you or your wife.
Go on. But,
and when were you thinking about me and my wife?
All the time. I'm not like either of you in two different ways, and it relates very specifically to the Seahawks preseason and what I saw. You, Brock, are a man of faith, right?
I like to believe I am, Mr. Michael, yes.
But to be a man, and I'm not going to speak specifically about your religious beliefs, but to be a man of faith means and requires believing something in which you have no proof and cannot see, right?
You've not seen with your own eyes.
That's right. But you have to believe and you have faith. Well, in order to like believe that the Seahawks are going to be good this year, you have to watch these games, not see it, and then be like, well, I believe because I have faith in Jamal Adams and Russell Wilson, all these people that I can't see with my own eyes. I can see them at practice playing against each other.
So like, Russell Wilson is God.
Well, I think we've been saying that for a long time. I had to believe in it, something I can't see. And your wife, Brock, I would put her in the category as well, not for her faith necessarily, although I know she's also a person of faith. But what does Molly do for a living?
Designer.
She's a designer. She's decorator.
Interior,
right?
Designer.
So she can walk into an ugly room and see what it could look like. She can walk into a dilapidated old house that needs some work and be like, oh, this is going to be great. You just got to do this over here, paint this on the walls over here. We can do this kind of cabinet over here. Mm. And in her mind, I'm assuming, because she's good at what she does, because I've seen some of her work, she can imagine what it will look like when you get all the fixings in there, all the extra stuff. I can't do that at all.
She's a visionary, Michael.
Well, all right. That's yeah. a nice sure.
vision.
To say.
She has a vision for what that space will be.
I can't do that at all.
I can't either.
I walk into a house and I'm like, but it's so ugly.
This place stinks.
And people be like, yeah, but if you, and like, I'll walk in back later to like somebody who's, I was like, man, how did you know that space could look like that? I never imagined it. Like, I don't have that muscle or whatever it is. And so, as I'm watching the Seahawks look like garbage, it's really hard for me to imagine what happens when you put the Jamal Adams over here and the Russell Wilson paints over here, and then you bring in your wide receivers and your Will Disley, and like, oh, right, that's what it's supposed to look like. Because I'm completely, even though I know all those things, I'm completely overwhelmed by the low quality of what I'm watching in the moment. And so I was really glad to see that, like, oh, okay, they can beat a team. Even though it means nothing, none of those three games told us one thing about the Seahawks this year and the kind of team they're going to be. But it was certainly, I don't know, a sigh of relief for idiot me to be able to see them go out and win.
Are you in any way a historian? Does what you've seen in recent history, in recent memory. We know your memory. You could throw that in the list, too.
Right.
I mean, we know your memory is
not
shot.
A memory guy. Yeah.
Could hardly even remember last year.
All right.
Does history matter at all? Does a track record, a resume, what those guys have done?
Of course it does. Yes. But the fact that they're going to be in a new offense and the fact that there's going to be some players that aren't, some new faces. Like, I want to see what it all looks like when it comes together. And we haven't had a chance to see that yet.
Well, and the beauty is now you got to wait another week.
I don't say it's a beauty. More of a pain.
I know. I'm ready to go now. So did you learn anything while I was walking around in circles saying, what color do you paint this house? What did you learn?
Well, I know your struggles, Mike. I know your wiring. I've known you for a long time, so this doesn't surprise me. I want to try to encourage you. Can I go through some things of what I know?
Yeah.
I'm not going to use the Peter King, what I think. How about what I know and then what I don't know?
Yes.
Can I lay it down that way?
Yes.
Do you want me to go back and forth with what I know and what I don't know? Do you want me to run through?
Yeah, okay. Go back and forth.
Let's talk a little bit more about how we're going to go through it.
All right, shut up, Howdy. Let's go through it.
Howdy, this is a podcast.
He's a visionary, all right?
Howdy, you can just edit this out if you want. You're in charge of the post-prod.
Can we go?
Isn't this all you ever wanted was to have post-production responsibility so you can just change it?
You have no idea.
I've never listened to this thing, so as far as I know, you could change all of it. I have no idea what final product sounds like.
Here's what I know. Russell may have only been number 12 on the NFL Network's top 100 players, which we talked about last week, but he's top 4 in most irreplaceable players in the league.
Top 4?
Top 4.
Who's ahead of him?
I think Aaron Rodgers is up there.
You think that Aaron Rodgers has been hurt and we've seen them succeed.
Not really. We've seen them fall off a cliff and Jordan Love is his backup.
First round pick. Geno Smith can't run without falling down.
Geno had a good game.
No, he didn't. That's not true.
He hurt you.
That's not true.
And he responded.
Not true at all.
Stepped up in the pocket. He led him on a touchdown drive.
Nope, he was
much better.
Nope.
We've liked to banter about his war, right? His wins above replacement.
By the way, I think Russell's more valuable than Aaron Rodgers. I believe that.
Aaron Donald.
Yeah, he's not a quarterback. We've seen what happened. They were still really good without Aaron Donald against the Seahawks last year.
Tom Brady?
Number one.
Number one. Who's backing Brady up now?
Right. Kyle Trask.
Who?
Yeah.
That's not a real person.
You made that up.
Not good.
All right, Tom Brady is number one. Yes, based on that, Tom Brady
Patrick Mahomes, number two. Chad Henne backing him up, sorry.
Yeah, that's right. I can't believe Chad Henne's still in the league. All right, Patrick Mahomes, Tom Brady. Fine, I'll give you those two. Okay. But Russell's next.
Okay, so he's number three.
Yes.
He also would mean, I think, watching this preseason, 7 or 8 wins, at least. Wins above replacement.
So without you think if they were to go, I have to think about
this now. The 17 games sucks.
I know, it's so weird. So let's say they were to go 13-4 this year with Russell Wilson. You think that they would go...
Yeah, that's not going to happen, by the way.
6-something?
6-11?
What is it, 6-11? Yeah. Oh, God, this math is all over the place.
Just add one to whatever.
God, you can't. It's too
hard.
Yes,
you can.
6-11. You think they'd be a 6-11 team without him if they're a 13-win team with him?
I think so.
Okay.
Yeah, you?
I think it might be bigger. I don't know. They win a game based on what I've seen so far.
There's some bad teams out there, and over the course of the year.
But you don't play many of them. I think that Russell Wilson's wins above replacement might be as many wins as they have this year. We found out that was Peyton Manning's. I'm not joking. We found out that was Peyton Manning's war. As many games as his team would have won, that was his war. They went without him. They didn't win a game.
Two and 14.
They did? They went
2-1. But your points, granted. It was at least double-digit wins, if not more.
Yeah, and I think Russell Wilson's is probably the same.
Yep. Here's what I don't know, Mike. I don't know how much autonomy Shane Waldron's going to truly have, and I don't know his acumen on game day for being a step ahead of the defenses he's going to face. I watched his tape at BBNN. I know we talked to the sources very close.
He really got out ahead of Belmont Hill and Roxbury Latin that year.
Yes, but this is the first time doing that with Pete Carroll, who we know is involved. Right, we can look back at some of the history with Tom Cable and Daryl Bevel. We can look back at the start of the Schottenheimer era where they went 0-2, and you remember what happened? little, we're on this faith junket, little come to Jesus meeting, right? With Shoddy, like, no, we're not doing that. We're not putting this all on Russell. We're not going to be that kind of a team. We're going to get back to who we are. We know last year in a third, fourth down situation against the Rams in the second half, we know that Pete got involved and gets on the headsets and is going to be involved. We know that Pete has no relationship prior to this season with Shane Waldron.
Right. So just to be clear, you're not saying Shane Waldron can't do this. You're saying Correct. You don't know yet. I mean, that's something we are going to find out.
Totally don't know.
Right. And we didn't find out any of it during the preseason. There's no way.
There is no chance. Right. There is nothing in the preseason. They were vanilla. It was finally nice to see, by the way, in the third game, some of what you're going to see. Formationally, little jet sweep, you know, a little check with me, a lot of tight formations. I think things that you will see. But as far as his acumen, as far as Pete's role in it, as far as any of that, as far as just his quality of being a play caller that's ahead of your opponent. He has no experience, so I don't know how any of that's going to look. Okay, here's what I do know. I do know that Chris Carson's going to make some incredible runs this year. He's going to look like the best back in this league on more than one occasion, more than one game, maybe multiple games. He's going to be an absolute monster. I know that. I also know that he's going to be hampered by injury, and backs 2 and 3 on this roster have to be difference makers, and that concerns me. Alex Collins, oof, quick feet. Looks great, slim. But he doesn't have elite speed, and this system requires that. This system, you got to put your foot in the ground, and you've got to have a unique gear.
Rashad Penny?
Here's what I know about Rashad Penny. He has elite unavailability skills.
Well, no, that's not true. I mean, you're saying that
there's
he's
only
CJ
one
Pro
thing
size.
I know.
Right. I mean, that's CJ Pro size you're referring to.
We're getting pretty darn
close.
We're
getting close to Pro size territory.
Pro size had the toe,
Seriously,
the foot, the ankle,
on.
The knee, the quad, the hamstring, the hip, the tummy ache.
You think that he's precisely injury prone is what you're saying.
I'm saying that fell silent as you guys were soaking in those three words.
Well, I was trying to determine, because I had read your email about how you had thought it was Carlos Hyde. So I was trying like what you meant. Like, yes. Oh, it's Rashad Penny.
Yes. Yeah. Elite unavailability skills. That unfortunately has been his track record for 3 years. Just when you want to get excited, and the ACL was catastrophic, and that's horrible, and that's awful, and that was real. But, you know, weight issues, thigh issues, soft tissue issues, been a problem.
He looked pretty good, I thought, this preseason. I thought he did. I thought he looked pretty good. I thought he looked pretty good in the third game. I thought he looked fine.
Sure.
I thought he looked good in practice, and I thought he looked good in the third preseason game.
Yeah. Here's what I don't know.
That doesn't even get a response from it. Just for the record.
Uh-huh. One thing I do know, Mike thought Rashad Penny looked good.
I thought he looked good, but I will say that, you know, I wish he were more physical, obviously, and I wish he were to use that breakaway. He does have some speed.
He does.
And he does have a decent track record when he's gotten carries. He's got a couple hundred-yard games when they've needed him. So I'm not out on Rashad Penny, but I hope that this offense suits him better, that he can get ahead of steam, I loved when they ran fly sweep with him. Get him into space and let him use the speed and that ability in space to make people miss. I think he's got some of that. He's got more of it than anyone else on the roster, doesn't he? As a running back, I understand you. Oh, I think
Chris
he does.
Carson's right there. I don't. If you were,
I don't think he has that. I mean, I love Carson. Don't get me wrong, and he's much more physical than anyone else.
32, looking so good,
but he does not have that elite breakaway. Like, okay, I'm gone. And I think Penny does have the ability to do some of that. I like Alex Collins a lot. I have since college. And I was no one was more excited than me to watch Alex Collins do his thing in the preseason this year. And I thought, again, he looked better in this offense than he did in the Schottenheimer offense. But I still think Rashad Penny will factor in more than Alex Collins will this year. Okay. We'll see. Maybe he'll probably be traded by the time this podcast comes out, but that's just my guess.
Is that a legit possibility, Brock, that he's traded based on all the stuff that we saw with the running backs this preseason?
Could be. Could be. I don't think a DJ Dallas or a Travis Homer or any of those guys who, you know, are going to be fighting for the final roster spot, special teams, practice squad, all that. I don't think they have value enough for another organization, the Ravens, who lose J.K. Dobbins.
Does Collins there, just based on the fact that they've had him before?
Possibly.
Or does he have less, because that's where he sort of...
Because he's always available on the waiver wire. Well, he's already proven that.
And that's where he had his legal issues, right? Wasn't that when he was in Baltimore?
Yeah.
Yep.
So maybe he's but not as the
gap,
welcome there.
From your eyes, Brock, the gap between Rashad Penny and anyone else who's been fighting for that running back spot, how big is it?
Pretty significant. Homer and DJ Dallas are just they're just practice squad guys and little role players, and but they're not going to help you beat the 49ers. Right in December or whenever you
not
play,
as like a running back, they might have special teams.
Correct, absolutely. Right. They can have a role, they can have a niche, they can be quality player, they can be a spot starter or whatever. Rashad Penny was a first round pick, supposed to be a difference maker. He's 225 pounds. To Salk's point, that can run. Salk's eyes don't lie. Let's be very clear, okay? He may be a man of very little faith. He may be a man of no vision in when it comes to interior design spaces, but what he is a man of, and he still has, especially with his reading glasses, he still has solid vision.
Yes.
He can look when he sees it and make a pretty strong evaluation and have a pretty strong opinion. And, you know, many times from John Carlson to Lofa to Tupu through the years, his eyes have been pretty good when he gets to actually lay his eyes on him and see him. And I know what you're saying, Saul, because when you actually watch Penny show his ceiling, that's really what you're asking, Howdy. Like, Rashad Penny's ceiling is much higher than Alex Collins or Homer or DJ Dallas or anybody on this roster. I don't know if it's Chris Carson. Because I don't think he's as physical as Chris is, and this is a league that demands physicality and a system that demands it. But he's got a high ceiling. And could that be appealing on the trade market? You're right. Like the last two podcasts, pretty monumental news has happened from the time we tape it to we release it. Jamal Adams and others. I don't see him. I don't know if another organization that is depleted at running back says, yeah, all of a sudden give me Rashad Penny because I can count on him for 10 to 12 games. But he's a better fit here. Here's what I don't know. I have no idea who's going to be the starting corners when this team faces Carson Wentz, possibly in Indianapolis, and whatever it is.
Who do you think are going to be the starter? Because add Sidney Jones now into that mix. Who do you think are going to be the starting corners?
I think it's going to be DJ Reed, Nikhil Witherspoon. That's what I think, and that doesn't elicit a ton of huge optimism from me. DJ Reed was good in the second half of last year.
I like him. You can't not like DJ Reed.
No, I like him.
What he did for this team last year,
I like
ball
him.
Hawking, like he's everything you like.
I like him. But as a duo and as a tandem, concerning.
Well, which of those guys is playing like the Richard Sherman left cornerback spot?
It's been Akil Witherspoon in the preseason, starting a bunch of those games in that spot.
Yeah.
Not physical, by the way.
He's very, very slim.
Yes.
I saw him. He's shockingly thin.
And he does
like Trey Flowers thin?
I would argue thinner.
Yeah. No.
Yeah.
He's going to break an ankle out there.
Yeah, he's like, you know, supermodel thin.
He did not like to come up and hit either, which in this system you've got to do. I mean, that's what made Richard like elite. That's what's going to put him in the Ring of Honor, probably in the Hall of Fame. I mean, that dude played the ball, unbelievable ball skills. But even the last couple years in San Francisco, we watched it playing against him. He's a physical dude.
Yep. Always thought that he might make a good safety at the end of his career if he wanted to.
Shaq Griffin, physical presence, physical dude. You're going to come up. You're going to have to play some edge and some run support, and that ball bounces to you. You got to make that tackle. So, Witherspoon has shown me nothing of that.
So is that why you see Sidney Jones?
I think you see Sidney Jones and you see John Reed, the other guy they traded for from Houston, because they can play the ball and they're fast. Especially Reed is fast. Sidney Jones has ball skill. Sidney's not elite speed, but you combine those two. I wish you could blend those two, and I'd say that would be the other starter. But, you know, we knew this was a position of need. I've been saying that to you guys for a month. It is the area that is just got the biggest question mark of any position group on this roster. They've made two moves. Obviously, that will not be Stephon Gilmore, who goes on PUP. He's going to be out the first six games off of thigh surgery, so you can erase that. And I don't know if there's another corner move to be made, but competition is going to be at a premium, and those guys are going to compete. I do know that. I don't know who's going to start. I don't know who will play the majority of snaps this season. DJ Reed would be top of my list, but overall, that's going to be a very competitive position over the course of the year.
Yeah, I do like, though, I agree with you. I think there's a lot of question marks at corner. I think some of those are balanced by the strength of play at safety and what we should see between Jamal Adams, Quandre Diggs, and Marquise Blair, regardless of whether he's a a big nickel safety, or whether he ends up being just a nickel, or however they decide to do it. Plus Ugo Amadi, who showed again some of those ball skills that you talked about, Brock, a knack for being in the right place at the right time.
Yep.
I'm hoping, and I know it's not the same
thing.
It has
to compensate.
I'm hoping that is, you know, because they're extra strong there, that it can make up for some of the weakness also in the secondary.
I would agree, but you know, this is a matchup league.
I know.
You know, you can be good up front in four spots, and all of a sudden Aaron Donald's on the right shoulder of a limited guard and you've got problems. And you know that the Shanahans and the McVays and even the Cliff Kingsburys can formation, emotion, and shift and get you guys in one-on-one situations. And if Jamal is going to be around the box and you're going to have to bring five at times, and you know, it really, Mike, puts a premium on rushing four, in that four being able to affect five consistently. Because if you've got to rush five and you got to play man, those guys, no matter how good the safeties or nickel are still going to be in one-on-one situations and got to do their job. I know, here's what I know, special teams has got to be special this year, and it's got to win this team a game or two at some point. Covering kicks, you lose Nico and BBK, a couple of your best special teamers. You know, that may take a little bit of a hit, but Myers and Dixon, those guys, both this year in a 17-game season, you've got to say at the end of it, wow, they helped this team win this game.
Like they did last year.
Yes.
I mean, they both did
Jason
last
Myers,
year.
Perfect,
yes.
Correct?
He couldn't
not
have been
miss
better.
A field goal.
Yes.
Missed some
so
PATs.
He's not. So just let's assume he's not going to be as good as he was last year.
Oh, he could be, because he missed a couple PATs, so he's still got some.
All right, but he's in all likelihood not going to be perfect again. I mean, and that's not a shot at Jason Myers, so I thought it was great. It's unlikely to be perfect 2 years in a row.
Correct. Correct. But those two have to be elite. Like, they have to win you a game. Your special teams, Larry Izzo, those two specialists, they've got to win you a game this season. They've been here. They're locked in. They've got great experience. You've got, you know, the whole snapper situation. You got all of that solidified.
And, you know, to make the here point even stronger, I know that there's a lot of mixed feelings about this. Part of my argument about the way they lost that playoff game to the Rams, was that it was lost on special teams.
Mm-hmm.
That unfortunately, as good a year as Reed had, he fumbled the punt return. And if he doesn't fumble the punt return on special teams, I think they win. Like, I still think Russell Wilson comes back and wins that game. They're right in it at that point. They got the ball, like the 40-yard line. Russell goes down, scores, you're in the game. So Yeah, you're right. Special teams has to win you a game, and they can't lose you a game.
Here's what I don't know. I really don't know how this Dwayne Brown and Quandre Diggs sit-in situation is going to affect the amount of buy-in.
Mm. What does that mean?
That's just when things get tough, right? Not when it's good, not when it's rolling well, not when people are playing well, but just when it gets tough.
Because they come back and play week one, right? They'll be there.
By all accounts.
Okay.
By all accounts, how much do they practice? I don't know. How much further do they want to play this game? I mean, you're getting down to it. You have another week, obviously. This is a unique situation this year with the 17-game schedule, with this extra week, with less of a preseason game. I did see the Diggs warmed up for the final preseason game. He wasn't going to play, but he at least wanted to get his warm-up. But, you know, he made it obvious, and Pete Carroll talked about it, that he's making a statement. What statement are you making? What statement's Dwayne making? What statement did Jamal make? What statement did he make that, you know, there's no other team in this league, I believe, that has had a sit-in or a holdout?
Well, the sit-in, so the Dwayne Brown one makes perfect sense. Have we ever seen somebody sit in after starting to play? Like a mid-camp sit-in like Quandre Diggs has had?
Uh-uh.
So I've been thinking about that, and I got a couple of thoughts on it. One, did he wait until he waited? What is a show of respect for Jamal Adams, as if to say, all right, Jamal gets taken care of first. I'm not going to cause
maybe
a problem until Jamal gets taken care of, because I'm not getting in his way. He's the man here. I'm the number two. I show my respect for my fellow safety and the guy who clearly is going to make the most amount of money. He gets taken care of first. I know my place. And once he's done, now I'm ready to be the guy. Right. That's how I read it, is that he was. And in that way, actually give him some props for that, man. That's pretty cool.
That would be cool.
Like, hey, look, man, I get it. I see where I am. I still want to get paid, but I know I'm not going to get paid as much as this guy over here. So let him do his thing, and then when you're done with him, then we can talk.
And you could read the tea leaves and say that maybe that his representation heard from the Seahawks, this is what we're going to do.
That's right.
We're doing it in this order.
Do not even come talk to us right now. And then he's okay. I get that. So maybe he was a good soldier here, and now he's... So I give him a lot of credit for that. The second thing I think about Quandre Diggs is which one is Quandre Diggs? Is he the guy we saw his first year here and the second half of last year, who's a playmaker, who goes out and gets his hands on the ball and turns the ball over for you and get, or is he the guy that looked like Tedrick Thompson for the first half of last year? Because if it's that guy, you can send him back. Keep holding in somewhere else, pal. Got no interest. The Quandre Diggs that showed up here the first half of last year was an atrocity. He was terrible. Couldn't play. Could not play at all. He was invisible, except when he was getting scored on. The Quandre Diggs we saw in the second half of last year was the guy that we fell in love with year one, and I thought he was dynamite. I thought he was one of the major parts of the Seahawks' defensive turnaround in the second half of last year. So I'm pro Quandre Diggs as long as it's that guy, and I will admit to having a little bit of nervousness that where would like that one half of a year, is that what happens when he gets paid?
Well,
Do we need to see a little bit more before you pay him? That's my only concern with him.
We talk about this a lot at the QB position. It's the easiest to do so. It has the largest impact on a team and in a game. But those quarterbacks that can run the show entirely on their shoulders, they go, and it didn't really matter what slop you give around them. They're going to make it better. And Russell's that guy. Aaron Rodgers, that guy, right? That's usually the tier one, the elite of the elite is they take the reins, and it doesn't really matter what's in the wagon behind them. And then obviously you have a lot of quarterbacks. The majority of them need help, need a supporting cast. Quandre Diggs, the first half of last year, Mike, to your point about, ooh, I hope the improved safety play can help the corners. Well, guess what happened when you had LJ Collier and Rasheem Green rushing the passer consistently in the first half of last year? No help. And a corner with a broken knee, right, who couldn't play. No help. And, you know, that position, you have to have a supporting cast. You have to have difference makers around you. You have to have impacting the quarterback. Because if you sit back there for 1,002, 1,003, 1,004, 1,005, it doesn't matter if it's Ed Reed and Troy Polamalu.
No, I think if you're buying into this defense, though, you have to be buying into the fact that the pass rush is going to be better. Right, that once they got Dunlap last year, it improved. You're now adding Kerry Hyder to that. Right, Daryl Taylor is going to be healthy this year, and
Mayoa is back. Jamal is a pass rusher.
So
remember,
if you believe in the Seahawks defense at all, it has to start there, or else you don't believe in it.
Correct.
So you have to assume, and they have to assume that the pass rush is going to be decent, if not good. Right.
Yep.
And if that's the case, then Quandre Diggs is awfully valuable. And if that's the case, then maybe you can survive some of the corner issues. So they have to have that.
Yes.
It puts a lot of pressure on a few of those guys. Kerry Hyder and Daryl Taylor have to be good.
Yep, and Benson Mayoa's got to build on and be available. And Carlos Dunlap has got to, you know, play as he did a year ago. His hair on fire still.
I was already assuming some of that. Like the unknowns.
And Jamal Adams too, right? I mean, part of Quandre being really good in that second half.
You're going to need Marquise Blair to step up. I mean, when he's in, man, he seems so dynamic. I mean, this was a second-round pick and a guy that they really seem to – they drafted him ahead of DK Metcalf, right?
Yes.
They drafted him in the second round ahead of DK Metcalf. That's how highly they thought of him.
Yep.
I've got to imagine that. And unfortunately, he just hurt all last year because he looked like he was going to be a difference maker for them a year ago. I think some of my confidence in the Seahawks, and I know this requires using a little bit of my vision, is those couple of things. Their pass rush has to be good or else this whole thing is forget about it.
Correct.
And I think Marquise Blair ends up influencing things enough with his physicality and then adding Jamal Adams that I can start to see how it all makes sense. I just think if you're Quandre Diggs, as good as you are, they've got depth at that position, man.
Yep.
Unfortunately for you, they have depth. Ryan Neal played pretty well when he was asked to play last year. Marquise Blair is a high second round pick that they seem to really like. I know
Ugo Amadi can play safety.
Ugo Amadi's another guy they seem to like. Heck, they seem to even like that Crosswell guy who played. He was one of the few bright spots in preseason. So it's not a shot at him because I kind of like the player, actually. I think he's a really good player, but I think he's in a tough spot holding out in a way that, or in, or whatever he's doing, in a way that I did not think about Jamal Adams or Dwayne Brown. I just don't feel like he has as much leverage.
Okay, last conversation here. And this is not what I don't know or what I know. I'm very curious where you fall on Dwayne Brown as the most irreplaceable Seahawk.
Well, he's not.
Russell Wilson is one.
Okay, there we go.
Russell Wilson is one. you know, we've had this conversation multiple years leading into a season, kind of like the 10th man on the Mariners side. I think we've had this conversation nearly every year about this time, training camp, put your roster together, all those pieces. Most irreplaceable. Biggest drop-off if he's not there position.
It's probably him, but what about DK Metcalf?
Yeah, I think if it's DK Tyler, like that position, that receiver position.
But I'm saying take DK Metcalf out. You're now looking at Tyler Lockett.
And who?
Howdy's guy, Freddie Swain, and Penny
still love,
Hart.
You still love
and
Swain, Howdy?
D. Eskridge, and who you don't know anything about yet. I think you may be right. It might end up being Dwayne Brown, but it might be DK Metcalf.
Yeah. Yeah, I'll tell you this. The more
Tyler Lockett. I mean, like one or the other. Without either of them.
They survived a lot of stretches without Tyler Lockett.
I know. Yeah. I think it's a real tough look for this offense if you take DK out of it.
It is. It is what the Rams did not have. It's what Sean McVay over his years did not have. He did not have DK Metcalf. He had nobody to put the fear of God into your defense. Like, oh my gosh, we have to account for this guy. I mean, you know, that's all the way back 10 years ago, Salky, when we were talking about number one receivers.
Yep.
What's the difference between a number one and
dictate
the next
coverage?
They do. And they put fear in that opponent, because if I leave him on an island, this is a home run. This is a center cut batting practice fastball. And that changes games in the NFL. I think DK may be two. Dwayne Brown is not past three.
No.
And this better. Right. This has to get resolved. And I'm curious to get a bunch of time off this week all around the league, right? It's a chance to set the rosters, and there's a lot of days off for these guys, and they'll crank it up. And I think we all just assume he's going to be back on the practice field next Monday.
I do. I assume that he will. I think
$800,000 a week.
I don't think he's got too much of a choice there. But I agree with you that when the going gets tough, these things tend to get exacerbated when you lose and you're already frustrated and you're already close to the edge. Yeah, I think you're right. It's time for everybody to kind of get together and see if they can figure this out. I got, you know, head up to the 31st floor, Brock.
Oh,
right there in Bellevue.
Is this where you want to take Pete and Quandre?
Yeah,
and
maybe go to
maybe
the
Jamal pick up the bill.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, bill's even less because it's a Send Prime happy hour, man. Steak and sushi happy hour. You just call it a day early, 3 to 6 p.m. or even late, 9 to close. In the lounge at Ascend, 31st floor there in Bellevue. And there's some, I mean, you want to hear about some of the stuff they have?
Please.
Because obviously you can really go for it here. Sushi tacos, a.k.a. crispy wontons with ginger carrot slaw, wafu daikon oroshi, fresh mango, and your choice of tuna and tobiko, hamachi negi, or king salmon and ikura. What do you think of that? You want to go there?
Whoa.
All right.
I think Quandre would like that.
You want to go Korean style karaage, a.k.a. crispy chicken?
Yes.
Now, I've been doing really well with the pronunciation so far, but I don't know how to pronounce this word. I've seen it any number of times. G-O-C-H-U-J-A-N-G, chili.
G-O-C.
Gochujang? Gochujang? I don't know how to pronounce it, and I'm sorry. Chili. Foie gras snow, celery, almond foie butter. All on your karaage chicken. That's crispy chicken. You want to go Nittamago deviled eggs, a.k.a. soy poached eggs, topped with bacon, pea jam, and slow-braised kurabata pork belly?
Ooh, I love that Buddha. Kurabata pork.
Yeah, that's good, right?
I'd like to sleep on a bed of those eggs.
You would be so stinky if you slept on deviled eggs.
That's such a bad idea.
Soy deviled eggs?
Yeah.
Brock, stay away.
No, you roll over and you just munch away.
Do you eat deviled eggs, Kyle? Mayonnaise in there.
What do you think?
No.
God, no.
I didn't think so. You don't eat the mayonnaise.
Deviled eggs.
Deviled eggs are the best, man.
Howdy doesn't either, I'm sure.
How about the Ascend Steakhouse Wagyu Burger, a.k.a. dry aged and Wagyu blend burger patty, white cheddar, over medium egg, crispy shallot, arugula, frisée on a brioche bun. End of conversation. I think that gets everybody together at the table. Learn more. Make reservations for happy hour at ascendprime.com. I'm sorry if I'm sleepy today, but I don't know if I've seemed sleepy. I went to the first concert I've been to since the pandemic. And you know me, I love to go to concerts. So it's been a while.
Did you Alabama, get the night right?
What was the name of
yes,
that lady?
Yes.
Alabama Rocks or something?
Alabama Shakes?
I saw
Alabama
them a few Shakes. Years ago. They don't seem to be. She seems to have left the band, unfortunately. I really wish they would find a way.
She was the band.
I know, and that's kind of the problem. And I don't like the music she's putting out nearly as much. But no, we brought the kids to their first ever concert. So starting them off early at 9 and 7, two nights before school starts, we brought them to see the Joe Bros, Brock. You know Joe Bros?
The who?
I'm a sucker for you.
There it is. Joe Bros. Jonas Brothers. Don't you know the Joe Bros?
Oh. Part of them.
I would have thought this is like played in your house sometimes. Your kids don't like the Joe Bros? They seem like perfect age for it.
I got a college student now, Mike.
Oh, I know. That's my point. Yeah. But that's about the right age to have. I mean, they've been big for 15 years with kids.
Oh. It's true. One of Disney's last great stars that turned from TV into music.
It was interesting. I've been to, I guess, what you would call pop shows before. I've seen Adele. I've seen Jay-Z, Beyonce, but not pop like this. I mean, for the most part, I like rock, and I've been to mostly rock and metal shows in my life. First time I'd really been to a pop show. Very different kind of audience. I've never, like, you hear about the shrieking, right, from Beatlemania and Elvis on through, like, New Kids on the Block and NSYNC and all that. I never actually heard the shrieking until Joe Jonas got on stage, and it's legit. Oh, my God. It's crazy.
Avery and Cecily did that? Did they appreciate the Joe Bros?
No. Avery was so great, and she was, like, really watching everything. Like, this is her first concert. Mm-hmm. She loves music and, like, really trying to determine, like, you know, what do I do? What are the social norms? When do I raise my hands in the air? When do I clap? When do we do, like, clap with the band, right, when the kind of music stops and everyone's just doing that? But, no, she was great. And then they put, like, oh, bless her heart. They had shots of the crowd. And she was, like,
trying to get
so bad. Oh, they're going to put
me on.
Every
kid wants so bad.
And it's just, I don't know, like, tears to my eyes watching it. Like, oh, man, we're in the third to the end of the back row. Like, there's just no way.
They're going
to
find us here.
There's no way they're going to find us here. But the shrieking was much more than I would have ever thought. Mm. Also, generally, I go to concerts. They're incredibly loud. Not this one.
That's
I don't know
nice.
If it's because those guys can't really sing, but like, especially Nick Joe, like, they had the volume down on the microphones. I was like,
well, you're getting, in the concerts you've gone to, you're getting a lot of instruments in your concerts.
True.
A lot.
But there
of
were instruments in this concert.
Music is not known because of its instrumentation.
No, clearly, no, it's not. But which is why I expected I'd hear a lot of their voices. But you couldn't even really hear them very well.
Now, you don't want to blast it. Everyone wants to hear themselves singing the song.
That's what. Do you think that's what it was?
Yes.
Is this just a sing along?
Yeah.
Man, I only knew like three songs.
It's
so
for
I was
8 to 12 year olds. Yeah.
No, it
all
wasn't.
All they want to hear is
absolutely
those
not
singing
true.
Their own songs.
That's absolutely not who was there. It was 20-somethings
that grew up at this when they were 8 to 12 years old at the
that's
time
who it
when
is.
It came out.
Yes, it was 20-somethings, even early 30-somethings. Oh, yeah, they played this. Is this Love Bug?
This is Cool.
Oh, yeah, Cool. They played this, too.
Cool!
So Avery and Cecily singing along?
Yeah, Avery did, for sure. I mean, when they played Cake by the Ocean, she definitely sing along to that. Oh, yeah. But then in the middle of it, Avery's like, Dad, can you take me to see either Red Hot Chili Peppers or Aerosmith? Like, yeah, I absolutely can.
You're speaking my language.
Like, yeah. In fact, let's leave now.
Packed.
And
we're
I'll
gonna
take
get a flight to L.A. tonight.
I'll go take you to see them anytime you want if we could just leave right now. Anyway, and I was bummed because I missed the Mariner game. And what I really like,
Aerosmith, you better hurry.
I know, yeah, but I've seen them twice. Let's see if we can get Avery out there to see Aerosmith at some point. Have you ever seen one player dominate a series like Salvador Perez did over the weekend? Whew. I've never seen it. I don't think I've ever seen, like, honestly, the Mariners beat the Royals and Perez beat the Mariners.
Yep.
That's crazy.
Last time Rafael Palmeiro was in Seattle, probably.
That's been
do that all the time.
Palmeiro and Delgado are the only two that I can remember that just consistently destroyed the Mariners.
Whatever those, I mean, I was before my time here, but oh my God. Salvador completely beat them by himself.
Yep.
That was crazy.
Home run every game, right? Grand slam.
Two grand slams. What did he, at some point, like 13 of the 17 runs driven in by the Royals. It was crazy.
Do you think at any point you pitch around him?
You would think.
I think they tried.
Yeah. He just hit
bombs. Seawall missed the job there.
Yeah. Dude, I mean, he was an absolute wrecking crew force. And, you know, I don't know. I'm... They're not out. They're not done. But it's hard to be optimistic on their playoff hopes at this point. So I will start thinking a little bit of, and you know, I'll keep rooting. I'm going tonight. I'm excited to be there. You mentioned the 10th player award earlier, Brock. So 10th player award originated in Boston. It's the player who's gone above and beyond or has most exceeded expectations over the course of the year. It's Seawald, right?
I don't know. Can a pitcher get it?
Yeah, for sure.
Flexen is the 10. I didn't even know who Chris Flexen was.
Did you know who Paul Sewald was?
Absolutely. He's a cross thrower. I know relievers,
Brock,
Mike. You're talking about Mark Lowe here, okay?
No, you famously knew none of this bullpen. You were saying if they came and knocked on your door, you wouldn't know who they were.
He still wouldn't.
Any of them.
Sewald's been nails this year, man. So there's here are the candidates I would have for 10th player award. Sewald, Steckenrider, Flexen, Crawford, France, Toro. To me, that's the list. Maybe there's a couple of others you could add in there. Terenz, maybe. But I don't, I mean, that would be my list. Sewald, yeah. Steckenrider, Flexen, Crawford, France, Toro. Tyler Anderson? I mean, Toro and Anderson, they've been
too small sample size.
Correct. Okay.
So Steckenrider's been really good, but not as good as Sewald. So I've got to take him off that list.
He's been really good, but not in the same situation.
Exactly.
As Sewald's
absolutely.
His numbers are crazy, Steckenrider's are.
They're great.
He's not being put in the game at the most crucial moments consistently.
Well, and you see it. Like, he got the save against the Royals in the final game of that series because they used Sewald to get the job done in the eighth against the heart of the order. So Steckenrider's been really good. I got to put Sewald ahead of him. Crawford's been great in the leadership and all of that, but he was always projected to be a good player. It was just a matter of getting there, right? And same with France. Like, we always knew he could hit, maybe not as well as he's hit this year, but that guy's projected to be a hitter. He's done what
he's been amazing first base. It's hard not to have France as I look at these names.
They all got to be on the list. I mean, that's why you kind of narrow it down. These are the finalists.
Yep.
I'm going Sewald, man.
Wow.
I love this guy. I think he might be my favorite reliever they've had in my time
here. You've loved him since quite literally the first pitch you saw him throw.
That's true.
You were like, whoa.
Yep. Well, because we were watching some of these guys who were coming in and they didn't have an out pitch.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, okay, well, that guy's fine, but he can't get anybody out. Like, they get to that point and then it's like, okay.
Foul ball.
Exactly. Yep. And then you see Sewald's slider and you're like, oh, that's a wipeout pitch. That gets outs. That gets swings and misses. And because of it, his fastball gets swings and misses, even though he's only thrown at 91.
Did he come in the Cano deal, too?
No, they just got him.
Free agent.
He chose to come here over the Mets.
Nobody wanted him.
No, he just came here. Signed AAA deal.
He got called up
the same day as Kelnick and Gilbert, if you might remember. He's awesome on Twitter. If you don't follow Paul Sewald, you should.
Was him?
Yes.
He tweeted like,
yes.
And don't forget, Paul Sewald is coming
up. Today's the day of big news.
You've all been waiting for.
Isn't that great?
I didn't realize that was him.
It was Paul Sewald. And as it turns out, he's been much better than either of those two guys.
Last year, he threw 5 games with a 13 ERA for the Mets.
Right?
What?
He's never had a season below a 4.5 ERA.
He's been dominant this year.
Nasty.
And like, how about the game where he comes in with the bases loaded against the A and just like, I'm good. I'll strike everybody. I'm going to pop out. Like, I'm set.
And that game was falling apart.
Yes. Yes.
At the seams.
Dude, he just has been, he's calm, unassuming, funny, self-deprecating, and just absolute nails when he's had to be. His key rate is like 4 times the league average.
For a guy in a reliever that doesn't throw over 91?
It's crazy.
I mean, Zigan, this is your, and I don't know why you love him, Salk.
I love him.
Because you may be a man back to the last hour that doesn't have a lot of faith and can't project and have a vision of what a house could look like. But you are a man that knows zigging while everybody else is.
Well, that's true. I do like that.
And you do like that.
Honestly, I think he's my favorite reliever in the 10 years I've been here. And I'm kind of trying to think back of guys I liked.
C-Shack?
Well, definitely wasn't him. No, I mean, Ardsma had his run where he was a really good pitcher and then kind of fell apart. Yeah. Yeah. Tom Wilhelmson had his little run and then that kind of fell apart.
You never liked the bartender. Don't do that.
I never did. No, nope. I mean, none of those guys kind of got into my... I mean, David Pauly had a good... we've seen guys have good little runs and maybe that's all this will be for Sewald and maybe it'll kind of evaporate after this year. We'll see. I mean, obviously, when Diaz was doing his thing, that was pretty electric. That was so cool. But I like this better because it's just so different. It's crazy to watch. I love it. And it's so much better. You don't really get a sense to how good this guy is until he was pitching in Houston or Tampa and you get the straight overhead cam. Yeah. When you realize how three-quarter arm he is.
And crossfire, right?
Yes, and just how much that slider truly goes left.
Yes.
Like, oh, I see. That's why it's a frisbee. It's like a wiffle ball. It's nuts. I love
it. Sustainable?
I mean, I don't know why it wouldn't be, because it's not just gas. I mean, maybe that's why it's not sustainable.
Because
if the slider
he's a reliever,
goes away.
And right. Relievers, as soon as they lose their touch on their one-out pitch,
okay, howdy,
you know,
gosh.
That's true. But the reason he could be sustainable, I think we got a chance to see him last week, is Sergio Romo. That guy just throws like 80% sliders.
Yep.
Who's the kid we saw this year in Baltimore? Their
Hudson.
Closer?
Oh, that guy was it Hudson?
Valdez or something?
Whoever that guy. He was filthy. Oh. All slider. He was throwing like 74 miles an hour. Couldn't hit him.
Hudson, what was that guy's name? Street?
Houston Street.
He did it for a number of years on the back end with no velo.
Keith Folk did it. I mean, that's going back a little ways. But we've seen guys. I mean, Trevor Hoffman did it with no velo once his velo went away and just had the changeup. You just couldn't hit it. If Seawald's slider is that good, yeah, it might very well be sustainable. I love it, man. I think it's such a great under-the-radar signing. And what do you think I don't know what his actual war is, but how many wins do you think they lose if it's not for him this year?
Four.
Maybe more. Six? Like, they might not be, they're like down near 500 without him. It's a remarkable
story. At the point of taping right now, 70-62, so 30 games to go. I think they're 4.5 out of Boston for the final wild card spot. But out of the final 30, you think they can go 500?
I think they can. Yeah, I don't see why they can't. Why not?
It just feels like there's some fumes going on.
Yeah, I think that
Kikuchi's on fumes. Logan Gilbert's on fumes, just starting rotation-wise, which, you know, really got them into this. Mm-hmm. It was when Kikuchi and Logan Gilbert and Flexen and Marco found himself. That's kind of when you made this run, right? And all of a sudden now, anybody not named Flexen or Marco gets the ball. I guess that's not fair. Your lefty's been good too, but I don't know. It just feels... And watching Kelenic getting big at bats and big moments, and you're just kind of waiting. Come on,
How many chances has Kelenic had to be a hero?
Oh my gosh! Oh my gosh!
Like 100, and he's taken a few key walks in those spots. I want to give credit where it's due. I mean, he had a walk-off walk. He's had a few walks that eventually come around to score winning.
Well, I mean, the Royal Series. I think his back-to-back innings came up with the bases jacked.
Yep. And just unfortunately, every time he's had an opportunity, not every time, but if so many of these times had an opportunity to be a hero, he's just missed. Yeah. And the whole city, you just feel just do it once and everyone's going to be on this kid's side. Just do it once. Just come up with that one big hit to be a hero. And maybe it's not to be this year. I understand why they keep giving him the chance, though. Like, why wouldn't you? You do have split masters this year.
Yep.
It's not 100% go for it at all costs. It's go for it while developing a few of your young superstars so that they can turn to be great, right?
Yep.
So you got to keep giving them those chances. I'm like, you could have pinch hit Kyle Seager for him the other day. Does that make any sense? Isn't some of the value continuing to give this kid these at-bats and let him find out what happens in them?
100%. In some ways, though, it does feel like you got through all this time. You got 30 games left. At this point, it may be pause time on development to say 30 games to win it. That's it. That's what we're doing now. So, for that one instance, maybe it's okay. But moving forward, it's 30 games now. You go. You make a push because you have 30, games. You had 140, 125.
Yeah, you had plenty of time for development. I think that's a good point.
30 games left, you go.
You know, that's a good point. I think you're right about that. You've got to stop with the development. Like, this is win at all costs right now. And just see if you can get
Jose Marmolejos is up. Jared Kelenic has 2 strikeout games back-to-back. That's it. He's sitting down for a game.
Yeah, on the other hand.
You can't do that anymore.
The other hand, Marmolejos is a butcher. And Kelenic's played some really good center field. So... I understand your point. Yep. Go for it, and it's got to be sort of above development for the final 30 games of the year here. So I think that's a really good point. All right, we're going to get to some mean tweets, Brock, in just a moment here to finish things up. But there's a story, not a Seattle story at all, but it fits in with many of the things and ideals that we've talked about over the last few years. So I love this whole Mets booing story.
Oh,
I love it.
I knew you would.
I couldn't love this story anymore. There it is, yes. The Mets, the kings of putrescence. There you go. I love it. So if you don't know the story, I'll just set it up quickly. Rafael Furcal, Javi Baez, and who's the third player? I forget.
Francisco Lindor.
Oh, Francisco Lindor. They're booing the fans when the players do something well. And their rationale is, well, if they boo us when we do something bad, we're going to boo them when we do something good.
What a rationale.
It's hysterical.
baseball players.
But this only works with the Mets. And so, like, Mets fans love to boo. I've told you the story about my buddy Dave and his dad. I don't know how many times. I'll tell it again quickly. He's one of my best friends. Huge Mets fan. Grew up in New York. Like, obsessed with the Mets. And I talk to him every year at the beginning of the year, and it's always the same. It's like, dude, Mets are going to, like, they're going to win 140 games.
The squad is stacked.
They're so good. Jacob DeGrom is going to win 35 by himself. Like, every year I get the same thing, right? And they kind of go through it, and they're like, okay, Pete Alonso, 74 home runs. Like, okay, like.
This is the year.
Yeah. Yeah, well, so he'll go through the roster and, like, okay, and that's, you know, March. Every year I'll talk to him in, like, July, and it's like, dude, you know what we're going to do? Me and my dad, we got tickets tomorrow night. We're going down. We got a sign. We're going to boo the heck out of these guys. We're going to boo them. We're going to boo so hard. It's going to be great. And there's no animosity in the booing. It's just like part of the fun of being a Mets fan is you go down and you boo them. It's not malicious, but it really does happen a lot.
Boo this man!
It happens a ton. Specifically with that team in that city. So if this were going to happen, Brock, it was going to happen with the Mets. But I don't think this is just the Mets or their fans. The Mets are an easy target, and they're a catalyst for this, obviously. And the fact that the owner, Cohen, opened the door with his public criticism of the team, I think is unique to them. Also, the Mets are a tabloid team. That's kind of what they are. They're always mm-hmm. trying to get the attention in a town that cares much more about the Yankees and other things. So they're constantly looking for attention, and Cohen is looking for attention and all of that. So this is in some ways like a logical
kinda like
extension.
The Clippers.
Oh, but no, because there's, well, maybe now.
Second fiddle.
Yeah, but maybe now. But for years, the Clippers were such a national joke that it's hard for me to ever get over that. Okay. The Mets aren't a national joke ever the same way. I mean, they've lost a lot, but they've won a couple championships. And they've been in the finals, and like they're generally good a lot. But there's something like inherently wrong with them, and they're and essentially in New York, it's that they're not the Yankees. Yeah. That's what's wrong with them. They're just not the Yankees. And they're in Queens, and like
a lot of crossover fans, Jets and Mets.
Yes, yes, tons of cross. That Jets, is the crossover.
Nets, Mets, Islanders.
Yes, yep.
Yankees, Giants, Rangers, Knicks.
Yep, exactly. That's generally kind of.
It's kind of Manhattan or Queens, Long Island.
Yeah, and you see opposite. I mean, there's opposites, but people who have a mix. But that's generally, I would say, kind of what you get in New York. So here's what I texted Dave. It's like, dude, I need your opinion on this. It's like, I love it. I was like, yeah, that's what I figured. He's like, I hope it escalates. We deserve it. I want the whole team in the dugout with paper bags over their heads like Jet fans. The Mets win 5 in a row. They all show up with paper bags on their heads.
Oh, God.
I think that's great. So anyway, they're having fun with it, I think, in New York. But I think this has been brewing in sports for a while. As athletes become more empowered, less connected to fans, I think it stems partly from things like the name and likeness deals, right, which are giving athletes more and more substantial power to themselves. I think it stems partly from the direct access athletes have to fans or vice versa through Twitter and the things that fans say and athletes really getting a chance to see how fans see them, right? Remember the Eric Swanson stuff last month where his family is being threatened, this kind of garbage?
Did you say less connected with fans or more connected?
Well, I think more...
The fans of their fan bases of the teams.
Yeah.
They're not connected to those anymore because they don't view themselves as a member of the team
first. That's right. They're a member.
They view themselves as a member of themselves first and their fans first.
Exactly right. So because they're
That, Salk. That's twice exactly right.
Well, he's right. Well, he's
you
explaining
let him
my
end
point.
A whole segment last set. What is going what's wrong with
getting
you, Jonas soft. Brothers?
Yeah, the Joe Bros made me soft. Yeah. I'm sorry.
That's exactly right.
Play me that love bug.
Great point.
I'm softened up.
Howdy.
He's eating cake by the ocean.
Oh, yeah. That's the only place to eat cake. I think that those combinations of things and the bubble that I think athletes live in now, right? They don't really think they talk to that many other people. So then their impression of the fan base is what they see on Twitter.
Right.
And so you put all of that together, and this is not that big a surprise. And I don't blame the Mets players one bit. Because they also seem like they're having some fun with it. So I'm not mad at anybody. I think the whole thing's great. I also think that the commissioner needs to make it stop. They can't have this. it's just a bad look, man. I totally don't mind it. It doesn't bother me. I think the Mets fans are enjoying it, based at least on my good friend who's a huge Mets fan.
I might show up at the Rock Bottom tonight just to boo Salk, just because he booed me.
I never booed you, Coach. I never booed you.
It's been going on for years. Jim Moore is way from
way ahead of his time.
Way out there.
I think the commissioner has to make this stop, Brock. What do you think?
Well, the GM of the Mets, Sandy Alderson, is that right?
Who used to be in the commissioner's office.
Correct. So he kind of made a statement saying this, sorry.
And Javi Baez has apologized. He said they didn't mean to offend anybody and we're very sorry and all of that. Yep. I'm sure
it's going to go away. Francisco Lindor, you like your $340 million contract?
Right. You just can't do this.
Yeah.
Just they pay your salaries in some roundabout way.
Yep.
But I honestly think that the players have a pretty good point, and I really do feel for a lot of the guys. I know they're making a ton of money. I know that, you know, it's a great lifestyle they lead, and all they have to put up with is, you know, some people taking shots at them on Twitter, whatever. But that doesn't make it any less real. They're still human beings. Heck, Brock played professional sports once. He's a real human. I've come to understand that over the years. These guys have feelings. They're not robot automatons.
Do you know how hard it is,
people?
Mike? Do you know how hard it is when I get to that Champaign airport? Pour my heart and soul into the opener in Nebraska, Illinois. I get to Champaign, little airport. Delayed flights, of course. Delayed. So I have to get on my Twitter, and I just see all the hate, Mike.
Oh, you get the mean tweets.
It's hard.
We're going to get to that.
Yemen!
What is that? Oh, is that Brittany? What is that?
He's a human!
Oh.
He's a human.
Yeah. I mean it.
Is that the Brittany
Leave
person?
Leave Brock alone.
Yeah.
Chris Crocker.
That's Leave what I thought. Alone. I thought, yeah.
Leave athletes alone. A lot of people giving a lot of shade to Brock. It's probably been 2 years since we've had people giving you
I'm so
shade.
I'm so excited. Wait, just a minute. Could this happen in other sports? Or is this unique to baseball?
We had that time where like the no-name Seahawks receivers were pointing at their watch, right. Like, about time,
yes,
about time.
Kevin Smith.
That wasn't exactly at the fans, but that was like a kind
that was
of
at
their
the coaches.
That was there. Hey, keep doubting us. Yeah.
That was at the coaches, though.
Yeah,
oh,
weird.
I think the NBA
the
players
NBA
are more
right
than
there.
Empowered. Absolutely.
Super empowered. You
yes.
can see it there.
You can see them walk off the court.
All these sports, all these athletes in every sport are doing it online. The only step they have to take is to do it in a stadium.
Doing it in the stadium.
All
Kevin Durant spends all day on Twitter just flaming fans.
Right.
And doing it quite well.
Well, I don't know if this is related or not, but I don't know if you guys saw. I'm sure Kyle did. I know he did. Was the end of the golf this weekend. It was unbelievable. Brock, were you watching any of that? Did you get to see that?
I was not watching
awesome.
Live.
So great.
Wow.
I mean, just Cantlay and DeChambeau going back and forth, six playoff holes, matching each other, great
just
shots.
Pouring in putts. I mean, after having some like friction and drama earlier
yes,
in there.
Hey,
Patrick, will you stop walking?
I
thought it was a little overblown,
yes,
too. Like,
because it was DeChambeau, people kind of went off. I thought he was like, hey, man, can you stop moving? I didn't think it was.
But Bones McKay on the course, he's like, they haven't spoken to each other since.
Right. I wonder if they'd spoken to each other before then, though. Like, I don't get the
it's
sense.
Bryson. Not a lot of people talk to him.
And I don't get the sense Cantlay talks to anybody. Plus, he wasn't wearing black, so I didn't even know it was him. The whole thing was confusing. But here, let me just read you what happened after all this. This is from Kevin Van Valkenburgh's story on ESPN.com. But Bryson DeChambeau was steaming. He had just missed a birdie putt that brought an end to one of the most memorable playoffs the PGA Tour has seen in recent years, and understandably, he wanted to get away from everyone. The roars for Patrick Cantlay, Sunday's winner of the BMW Championship, were still ringing out as DeChambeau ducked into the tunnel that cuts beneath the 18th hole grandstands. DeChambeau handed his hat to a gleeful adolescent fan standing at the rope line, then began a furious but silent walk up the steep hill that winds its way towards the Caves Valley Clubhouse. Halfway up the hill, something happened that made me feel like we've arrived at a miserable place in the never-ending circus that is DeChambeau. A patron waited until DeChambeau had walked by, but was not out of earshot, then sneered from over the rope line, "Great job, Brooksy!" DeChambeau spun around in a rage and began briefly walking in his direction. "You know what? Get the bleep out," DeChambeau yelled. He had rage in his eyes. And he walked away after that, and the ushers or whoever security took care of it and kind of made the whole thing go away. And now
for yelling, that a boy, Brooksy?
Well, and now this morning.
So now that this story gets more. So Michael Collins reporting this morning, yelling or saying Brooksy to Bryson DeChambeau will now be considered disrespectful from now on can result in expulsion from a tournament.
Oh,
this directly from Commissioner Jay Monahan. It has become an issue of being disrespectful to the players and the game. Brock, you can roll your eyes, and I understand where you're coming from. Obviously, the Northeasterner in me says, toughen up, Buttercup. This is what you get in sports. Golf isn't the same as other sports. It's not football. It's not baseball. It's never had heckling and jeering or any of that as a part of the sport. And it's never been directed at only one person on the entire tour who has to deal with it. Well, none of these other guys, many of whom you've called mental midgets in the past, have had to deal with it at all.
Tiger. Only one.
That was him.
I know.
He was jeering himself.
Gosh.
That doesn't count. And I guess when I see these two stories juxtaposed, the Mets and kind of where the like logical, where it goes, right, over time, the logical extension, I think I applaud the PGA for this. I think it's the right thing to just make this go away.
You think that goes away? You think that will not further empower other folks now to come up with a new one? If I can't say Brooksy, what can I say?
Right.
Response that said, related, the Waste Management Phoenix Open has been canceled for next year because there will be no fans. Everybody will be kicked out. Just be drinking day yelling.
Wasn't
Brooks
it great? Weren't we just celebrating like a month and a half ago? Great little feud between Brooks and Bryson.
Well,
isn't this awesome for golf?
Although, by the way, the feud is over. Did you know that?
No.
Koepka's agreed to do nothing because of Steve Stricker, the Ryder Cup captain, asking him, like, hey, man,
correct.
You guys are going to be teammates here. So cut it out.
Hmm.
I mean, they're obviously not going to be paired together, but like they're going to be U.S. teammates together.
They should be.
They should. Yeah, well,
they
that
should
would be.
Be
fun.
No,
alternate shot, Bryson and Brooks.
I do. I obviously, Brock. I like the drama, as do you, as we all do. But I think the PGA Tour is right. I think one player being completely singled out for this, where no one else gets it, makes it a little unfair.
He brings a fair amount of it upon himself.
He does.
With the way he treats people.
Yep.
Dropping an F-bomb back on a fan,
yep.
Letting that fan get to you. Where is that, you know?
I agree. Maybe he should be held more accountable for those things. But I don't think having him have to walk this gauntlet that no one else on the tour ever walks, that doesn't seem right to me.
No.
I don't know. He's not a great guy, clearly. He's not perfect. But I feel like that's
You got to be careful, man, because you bring it a little bit upon yourself. And if you allow them and show them that they are getting to you, what are fans going to do? They're going to continue, right?
But they're fanatics,
and they have every
forever?
Right to root for others. They don't need to sit there and support Bryson DeChambeau.
I don't think they do. No one is asking them to. No one says they have to support. Root for Patrick Cantlay all you want, but screaming and taunting him every single time he hits the ball, they're cheering for his ball going in the water. Like, that's just not what golf is in general. Generally, it's in awe of all the players and enjoying the great shots. And, yeah, I got players I root for over others. It isn't football. It isn't baseball. It isn't basketball. It's a different sport.
And when he was making his charge to shooting 59 the other day, were they celebrating him coming down the back nine? Absolutely.
If you read this article, it says that was completely overblown, that was not true.
All right.
That's Kevin Von Falkenberg. He said, look, I'll see if I can find you the actual line. But he said the NBC storyline was at best an exaggeration and at worst an outright falsehood.
Mm.
So I don't know how much of that was actually taking place.
Gotcha.
I don't know. It doesn't feel right to me. And it feels like I'm in support of the commissioner trying to end this thing. Now if people want to make fun of you,
you're always in support of management.
If people want to make fun of you, Brock,
yeah, you're all for it.
I'm much yes. Because
yeah, bring it on. Let's go.
Equal opportunity.
Brock Heward, you were worse at announcing than you were at playing QB. Didn't know that was possible. I couldn't think of a worse way to start the college football season than having to listen to you week zero.
You are zero.
Hey, Brock Heward, watching the game from Kuwait. It's 11 p.m. here.
Kuwait.
And the temperature is the same as it is in Champaign right now. It's not that hot.
Were you complaining?
Not complaining. I was just telling people it was steamy.
Was it? Did you get in trouble like Stelton did? Stelton was talking about how hot it was out in practice, and Will Disley's like, dude, I'm in pads.
You're sitting in shade.
He got, like, a little snippy.
Yeah.
At Fox Sports, please stop letting Brock Heward announce ball games.
letting him. They're paying him. It's not like Brock does it for free.
Brock, that is BS, and you need to call it as it is. That was a call, and you know it.
Oh, what happened?
It was a roughing the passer, followed by a taunting that eliminated an interception. Fairly critical play. And it was roughing the passer. You can't pick a guy up and give him the gravedigger in 20, 21.
That's suplex, man.
Yeah, it's not possible.
Yeah, no. Brock Huber talks to the audience like a hectoring, condescending schoolmarm.
That's true, though. Like, I can't argue that. You are a schoolmarm.
Come on.
That is what you do. I love you, but you are those things, aren't
a what?
You?
What?
A hectoring?
Yeah.
What is a schoolmarm?
You know what a schoolmarm is?
No.
You, essentially. It's like a goody two-shoes who won't let anybody have fun around them.
Oh. At Brock Huber. Who?
A schoolmarm is like the kind of guy who accidentally swears once in Phoenix and goes to church twice the next day to make up for it.
Okay.
At Brock Huber, you promised you would do better. Clemson.
Oh.
Oh, the P. Yeah. You've got to stop screwing that up.
Yeah, man. Yeah.
That's been year after year after year.
Otherwise, Fox isn't going to let you keep doing games.
Yeah, no kidding.
For free.
Know where your bread is, brother.
Lose your privileges.
Great job on the call on Saturday. You always make me laugh. Oh. Unique perspectives.
Oh, well, that was
sarcasm?
Was it? Or did Brock throw that one into you? Just like a little like humble brag.
How much does Howdy enjoy doing these voices?
That's not Howdy, is it?
Howdy. These are people who send this stuff in.
Oh, sorry.
It follows up on Twitter and asks them to send him some VO.
A lot of work.
That was a real southern accent for the last one. For what was this, Nebraska? Hey, what happened to your... I thought you told me Scott Frost is going to be like the best coach of all time. Isn't he going to get
run here?
No. You told... No, I want you to be held accountable for
this. Are we done here?
How much did you tell me Scott Frost is going to be great?
Yep.
He's terrible.
One of my most frozen cold takes ever.
Dude, that's a bad one. I don't think you know anything about college football. You should listen to me.
Wow.
That's right.
Speaking of
you and Bill Moose both. Swing and a miss.
Manu Lu's favorite college football analyst, Brock Huber. This guy might as well should join the Nebraska staff.
No.
Can't imagine how much he bet on this game.
Oh.
Well, hopefully ESPN signs this idiot. Stay away from Virginia Tech games. Be impartial for a play. Clown.
A lot to unpack there.
There
gambling,
is.
The ESPN. Yeah.
Some mixed up thoughts on Brock's process.
Are we done?
I think we might have to be.
Goodness.
The Scott Frost thing is shaking me to my core. I thought you knew stuff about college football, and now it's very
clown.
Clown. Very clear you don't.
Saturday night.
Yeah.
Ed Orgeron.
Oh.
Chip Kelly. Rose Bowl, one of your favorite venues.
Sack fumble.
Hey, Brock. Sack fumble.
Sack fumble, Brock.
I'll see him Thursday.
Will you
I'll
ask him about that? Find out what's going on with the sack fumble?
I'll see what I can do.
Say, when you see him, you go, hey, coach, sack fumble. See what he says.
Okay.
Will you do that?
Brock, sack fumble.
Say that
hey,
to
Brock.
Him. Please, when you first talk to him, say, hey, coach, sack fumble.
I'll see him Thursday
Hey, what's going on with your friend? Hold on, I'm not done with you. What's going on with your friends?
Who?
What do you mean, who? Well, I mean, starting with Scott Frost, who's the worst coach in college football, but after him, Trent Dilfer.
Ugh.
What is his deal? Is he roid raging? What is happening?
Lost his mind.
Dude, he's going to beat that kid.
Yes, it's Phil Dawson, 20-year kicker. His son.
It is?
What? Phil's going to jump over the fence. Oh, yeah.
Oh, man.
Oh, yeah.
What?
Yeah.
Is there more to that story that you don't get a chance to see in the video?
There has to be something before that. You look at the kid's eyes before he even touches him. There's something going on before
I'm sure
that.
There is. But
yes.
Whoa. Yeah.
Can't do that.
Whoa.
Can't do that.
That was a tough look. I mean, like, the amount of grief Dion got for asking to be called coach.
Right.
This was nuts. Trent looked like he was going to kill somebody.
Just feisty.
That's your guy?
Yeah.
Have you talked to him?
I haven't talked to him in a while.
Maybe he needs some Brock.
I got to check him. Yeah, I got to check
he
him.
He needs your calming influence. He needs you to be a hectoring schoolmarm.
Jim Zorn call him.
All right, we are done. I would tell you that we're going to be back to talk about Week 1 of the Seahawks, but they have this weird extra week, so I don't know what we'll do next week, but we'll make it great, I promise. Until then, the hay
is in the barn.
See everybody.
This is the chopper!